So it, what do we think is meant by an incipit that speaks about the structure of a product? What's the incipit then? Is it simply we're going to talk about the body?
Or about the loner body? It's
not about the body per se. It's to me anyway. It's her learning about or it's her knowledge of the body and its various parts.
Have you got any opinions on that?
Sorry, I was distracted for a second. So. The incipit that you think it is saying is what?
Well, we have one for the body and we have one for her knowledge of the body and its various parts.
Okay, so the incipit is basically going to talk about the parts of the body and her understandings of them. Is that correct? And that she is saying that she is repeating it, so she already knows this information. Anybody?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to use the incipit. Patrick, you've got something to say? No? Okay, so take the dream forward.
Okay. This evening, the teacher speaks about vertebra, whole spinal, intervertebral disc, spinal cord, nerves, regular growth, spinal curvatures.
Curvatures.
Yes. Curvatures.
Aaron, what does, in a whiz-bog way, what does all the stuff about the back refer to? Yeah.
Well, the back is the past, right?
It's the past, yes.
I think of the bones as the
convictions.
What are they? The hard and fast, hard
convictions.
Hard
help. Yeah, conviction.
Backbone is your structure.
Yes, that will come later on in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
I have a strange beep.
So do I.
Yeah, somebody's doing something weird.
Our batteries.
Like hello battery or something.
Not ours. Ours are still good.
Okay.
And I'm not on battery, so I don't think it's mine.
Is it Angela?
I think something was going on with mine. I don't know why everything looks okay, but maybe it wasn't. Sorry.
Okay. Well, it's stuff. Whatever.
Yeah, I can't change phones.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still. Yeah.
So most of what is
here that we're talking about what this specific structure of the back, the spine, and all that is about, rather than just the simple with the back and the discs and spinal cords and all that. So it's in a whiz-bog way, it's talking about a very important way of what represents how we're living our life.
But it's also, she has in there nerves, which is one thing that's other than all the other parts are talking about convictions and how they play in the life. But the nerves, what do the nerves mean?
Reactions.
Okay. So it's talking about convictions and reactions.
Yes. and flexibility of
the
intervertebral disc.
I can't even say it myself. I don't know how you'd ever say it. I speak the language. Intervertebral disc.
That's the correct pronunciation?
Yep.
Yeah.
Intervertebral?
Intervertebral.
Okay. Shall I go on?
Okay.
I would think so.
Okay. He draws them on the blackboard and has a skeleton to show us what happens when we are moving so that we support the spinal and so that we might harm the spinal. I take notes and enjoy the repetition.
And so, can you explain a little bit more about so that we support the spinal and so that we might harm the spinal?
Yeah, like scoliosis and stuff like this, and regular growth of spinal, of the spine.
And so that when you say, is that to, if we move in certain ways, we will harm the spine? I'm not sure.
Yes, that's what he says in the lecture.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if movement is the action that we take in life,
there are some movements that support the convictions. Mm-hmm. Let me say it like that.
I would.
Yeah, you can say it like that.
And some that might go against the convictions or doesn't have support. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I go on.
Okay.
Suddenly the teacher says, you do know that there is another side of all this, pointing at his drawings. Vertebrae show the firmness of your strong beliefs, that in a row keeps you upright during this lifetime. The intervertebral disc offers you flexibility with your firm beliefs. So this is the wisdom of the body part.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought up a whole Asawa background concerning the theme of this evening. I was very surprised. Why does he, a, quote, regular doctor, know so precisely about well-being and Asawa? He left us with that. Course was over. Until next time. And as I leave the room, I wake up.
So, how surprised are you at times when you see people that don't know about this stuff having understandings along these lines?
Oh, I am.
Because I see it a lot of times, all over the place. They just haven't put it all together, but they have great understandings of this. And you're just, in my opinion, reaffirming that to yourself, that a lot of people know parts and pieces of this. They just haven't put the whole picture together. But you see it all over the place, you know, like even in statements that people say, like, oh, my aching back or my, you know, a pain in the neck.
My sore shoulder.
Yeah. And then they express exactly what's going on. I've seen it lots and lots of times. So basically what you're doing is reaffirming to yourself, in my opinion, that this is out there, and that for you it is repetition, but for many people also it could be totally new, like others in your class. But there are those that understand this that aren't in Forever Living or Asava Massage.
All right. And yeah, and
go ahead.
Sometimes I cannot understand it because it so became a part of my life. It's for me, it's kind of like a natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm really surprised that people don't see the connections.
Okay. So a lot of times we'll have dreams just to give ourselves an attaboy in a way. You know, you understand these things, and now you're seeing that others, to some extent, understand them. And there's not a lot of real depth other than that in this dream, as far as I can see, unless somebody else sees something.
The only thing I saw was just sort of crossed my mind is, and this is just more a statement of, to me it would seem that, Simone, you don't actually expect to find people of like understanding. And maybe the dream is, you know, you're telling yourself that you might be surprised.
That's very good, Andrew. Yeah,
that there are people with.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, as you were telling all this, yeah, I mean, I was, you know, so this is just, you know, off the dream. As you were talking, as you're going through this, I was thinking about, you know, and so then you've said that there are people, you know, you're kind of by. Just my words. To me, I picture you said before, you're by yourself with these understandings. You don't meet too many people, or don't expect to meet anybody who has these understandings. And yet here a dream is showing you a regular doctor, an institutional person, can have these understandings, and you would be surprised. So maybe in your life there, you know, as you express or, in a sense, become the nucleus of this culture or this understanding, you'll find people who do or can understand it. That's somewhat off the dream, but that's built off of what I thought you were. You feel that then people don't understand it, and hey, here's somebody who does. What a surprise. By the way, my question is, how did you feel when he started talking about this other side of things?
Oh, I was excited.
Okay.
When I woke up, I said, oh, sad that it's over. Next time I'm gonna talk to him. And actually, I did have two very interesting conversations. A friend of mine, her husband has, just a moment. Testicle cancer?
Testicular.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we spoke about that. And a long-term client suddenly started a conversation on the table. It's very interesting what you do every Tuesday morning, is it? And she couldn't stop asking me questions about what we are discussing.
Oh, okay. She knows about these calls? How does she know about these calls?
Oh, I tell them. When they are interested, I tell them always about Asava stuff and what we do discuss and that the themes are changing, not only health stuff, also other stuff. Actually, the talk ended with the paragraph 19.
Mm-hmm.
I introduced her to the randomness of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very interested in that. She stayed half an hour longer, and yes.
So are you going to pursue sharing with her?
Yes. I know she's a regular client. She will come again soon. And I will continue the talk. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have anything else to add about the dream?
Not about the dream.
Okay, you have something else to add?
Simone, just an observation. I personally find that in my own life, sometimes I have to be the one who starts the, what do you want to call it, culture of new understandings. You know, I just have to bring it up. I have to talk to people, but not in a way to try and convince them. I had a friend in college who had a really good way of, he would always take the extreme position, like, oh, you know, this is a silly way of looking at things, but and he would get people in these conversations about, you know, kind of things that they wouldn't normally talk about. He just played with it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And my point is, the more you find a way for you to talk about these things that that works for you, whatever your style is, you know, play with it and figure it out. Maybe you'll find more and more. Maybe there's not as much resistance these days as there used to be.
From my side?
No, from others. Maybe there's more understanding of these things now.
Okay, yeah.
And maybe you're not as alone over there as you think you are.
Yeah, can be, yeah. I mean, I do have my clients, and I cannot do any more a regular massage without asking them, are you interested in an other view, or would you like to hear what I can tell you about your shoulder, or stuff like that, yeah. So maybe, can I read what Connie wrote?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
She wrote, maybe I do understand it now. Simone, you are getting your own personal confirmation of your growing wisdom based that you offer and practice.
Right.
I think I just understand it now.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. Does anybody else have anything they would like to speak about? I'll take that silence as a no. Okay, then we'll get back to the book. And where we left off was J-19, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I think we'll go in alphabetical order tonight.
Did you say number 19 or page 19?
Number 19. Number 19.
Okay, great.
Chronicles J, number 19.
Yeah.
No matter the seeming pattern or truths, you know, truths of life, you believe you have observed and experienced, life is random. But you have the authority that is far greater and more expansive than free will. To particularize and personalize any pattern you desire and follow that vision. And in that, it is possible to observe the pattern that is you. Why is this more expansive than free will? I don't understand that. I thought that was free will.
I think he's saying that it goes beyond free will.
Well, wouldn't free will be more in the moment? But this is saying that you can actually visualize what you want.
Well, we've always said free will doesn't have anything to do with choice.
Okay.
But free will is living as you... The free will, as Roger called it, free will is living in the action of living as you truly desire.
But in this, it's talking about the pattern that you see.
Okay.
In living as you truly desire.
Yeah, okay. And then following it.
Well, it's not that you're following it. It actually is who you are.
Okay.
So you don't have
to... Somebody, whoever is preparing meals or whatever, can they finish that, please?
Well, go on mute while you do it.
Okay, we'll put it this way. Whoever's moving around a lot...
It's not me.
Okay. So, anybody else have anything to say about that?
No. Nope.
Okay.
So, is it... Yeah, I'm not quite sure. Is it more expensive than free will because... It becomes self-evidently?
You mean that it becomes self-evidently obvious? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. And the pattern becomes self-evidently.
Yeah. In the free will, you're kind of setting up a pattern and then you follow that. And in the randomness of life and the truths of that, you actually can observe the pattern out of all of it. You know, we used to talk about the silver thread and things like that. There's a pattern that is you.
Mm.
No matter what you are
okay.
In the moment, free willing, there's still a pattern that is you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, Karen, you're up to bat.
Okay, number 20. I'm going to begin this description of relationships between personal body, personal self, personal being, eternal self, eternal being, with your personal body and more in many arbitrary directions. And not follow a causal sequence. So listen carefully with your eyes and visions, not with your causal ears.
Okay. Passage 21. There is no ongoing causal sequence in the universe. And that is really, really important, guys. So look closely for patterns of relationships. Not causal relationships. For causal relationships are short and intermittent, not continuous or lasting.
Okay, what's a causal relationship?
When you're trying to make something happen.
That one thing causes another. It's done, it's over after that.
Okay. Patrick?
Number 22. You have a body, but you are not your body. Actually, your body is the least enduring aspect of yourself. Your patterns and memories of your personal self are more enduring than your body. A memory of your eternal self is more enduring even than your personal patterns of memories. But if you don't seem to realize any of this, or even care, and for good reason, you are presently alive and want desperately to continue being alive. But you are clinging to the least enduring aspect of yourself. For now, that is probably why. But you end, or even necessary, because your body brought you alive and temporarily keeps you alive. Wow, 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 wow.
It kind of speaks to you, Patrick.
That's what I was wondering.
That's, you know, that the first 4, 8, 10 words. You have a body, but you are not your body. That seems to come up in my awareness virtually multiple times every day.
And how does that happen?
Yeah,
Patrick?
In what way?
How so?
That it seems that I'm at a point where I am increasingly aware of that, which in my responsiveness, my reactiveness, see that as body, and I can see as a watcher that it's occurring. And I just see it. And I see it around me and everything that, and everybody that I engage with. That I'm dealing with bodies all the time. And I'm aware of my still ongoing tendency to want to react as a body. And then I remind myself that I'm not, that's not me, that's not my body. Or that I am not that.
Oh, I see. I gotcha.
Anybody else experiencing similar type phenomena?
No phenomenon like that, but I like the last. I mean, I tended to go for the words that got my attention was that the body is the least enduring part of you, because I am kicking around an idea like that. I definitely don't have a clarity on it, but it's there.
I can remember Roger, as he was getting towards the end of his life, reminding me that this was such a temporary thing, the body, and that he was exactly talking about this, that was the least enduring aspect of him, and that he would go on. I can still remember that. Okay.
Okay. Who goes after Pat?
Sharon?
Me. 23. The question seems to be, while temporarily alive, can you possibly enliven a more enduring aspect of yourself, such as eternal self? The answer to that is yes! But how to do that will be discussed later. Damn.
Okay. 24. All you need to know now is that memory sustains and continues you as an eternal self. Patterns expand and extend you as a personal self. DNA and memories maintain your personal body.
Everybody got that? Or question?
Memory, why is sustained and continuous, and memories are personal body.
Yes. Okay. Andrew?
Okay. 25. Your original body in this life was produced and born, as in to birth, born from a parent, in this world by your body's parents, not by your parents. As you, and you as a personal self, walked into that body, or were born, as in born, he carried into it. Therefore, your body was not you, and was not even yours until you made it yours.
Okay, Karen?
I'm wondering if that implies that I actually had parents that were other than my body's parents.
Yes, he's often talked about that, you know, like with in his story with Mattathiah and all that, that the eternal self has parents that born him. But if you carry that even further, you can say, if you really carry it back, then you would say that different data and information coming together is like parents coming together to born a new element that is both of those put together. So in a way, that's parents, and then you just keep multiplying it out, and it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. Does that make
sense?
Okay.
So I'm not. So we're not talking parents as in individuals.
Well,
we're talking more data and information.
Well,
as a parent.
It's coming down to.
Can't really say.
I believe that he believed. That's all I can say. That there are parents of our eternal selves that bore us into being.
Uh-huh. As in personality, right. Individual entity?
Yeah, he was like for Roger, Hothir, whose father was Mattathiah. I have no idea who his mother was, but that Mattathiah was his father.
Okay.
Okay, so I get a question for anybody. I mean, how can you use that information in your life? Is it useful at this point, or in what way can you use it? I guess that's what I'm asking. And this is not a trick question, because I have no idea.
Well, for me, I think the way that you can use it is through imagination and getting in touch with your parents, so to speak, and setting up a relationship to actually communicate and share.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I never imagined myself having parents when I think about my eternal self. I'm not saying that I don't. I'm saying I've literally never even thought about it.
Yeah, well, it's not really one that I thought about much either. I just know that when Roger did his let's call it research in Alaska.
Yeah.
That this was what was presented to him.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Can it also? Oh.
Go ahead.
No, Patrick.
One of the things I was thinking of here is that. Rather, you know, parents, when we think of the term parents, we've got kind of locked in understanding or a definition of that. And what I've played with is lineage rather than parent. And if we think, too, in terms of imagination, that we're drawing on mind and memory. And I think what we do is that we can imaginate our own lineage. and we draw that out of memory. And so in answer to your question, Andrew, about how we make this understanding useful, is that instead of standing there only as this singular, alone entity, you can imagine yourself a whole network of lineage as you desire.
As a lone
entity functioning by yourself.
Yeah, and I think that that's the important thing, is so that you realize that you are not alone.
Yeah.
That you have an eternal family that is there for you, and
will function with you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in that regard, yeah, I mean, I can certainly relate to that. At least if nothing other than a provenance, I mean, I have felt.
Sure, that's a start, but you can imaginate that as far as you want.
Mm-hmm.
How can I be certain that it won't be anybody from my physical family from this lifetime?
Well, actually, you can be pretty well assured of that.
Okay, good.
The family that we have here on Earth is more based on DNA memories than on the eternal. The eternal that was your parents has nothing in, I mean, it's possible, but in most cases doesn't have anything to do with the eternal lineage. Besides which, when it comes together in a DNA pattern, it outpictures other than just the eternal for most people, because they tend to lean more towards the DNA and memories than they ever do towards the eternal. So if that helps and you can take comfort in that, then do so.
I want to find the eternal family. Do I just imagine it?
Well, do you do imagination?
No.
Then
it might be something I need.
I think that maybe it's time that you start experiencing the whole world that opens up to you when you imagine. There's no set place that you're going to go or anything, but you can definitely set up a topic of desired understanding or questions and imaginate on that, and a lot of times it takes you to very interesting experiences and information.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that done with the information from readings?
No.
Oh.
That's a start point.
Okay.
Part of the issue is letting yourself free of constraint. We're so habituated to deal with memories, IES, that it's a bit of an exercise to free ourselves from simply going by memories and trusting that we can access memories and give yourself a chance to try that.
Sharon, I think you're a bit of a natural when you try it out.
Okay.
You just kind of let yourself, for me, just expand out into the universe. It's just like a bigger breathing. I don't know how to express it, but...
Yeah. I can understand that.
And going past the confines of the physical body and just... allowing yourself just to journey and go.
You mean daydream, like when I was a kid?
That kind of thing, yes.
Yeah, that's part of it, yeah.
That I was always fussed at? Because I was fussed daydream?
Yeah, it can be one of your better talents. I think Roger had suggested in one something he wrote about imagination being you start with your image of yourself as an eternal being and then set a focus.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Those two things are keep it from just being fanciful, you know, random imagination.
And so when you say set a focus, you mean on...
Like, for example, like, so, okay, here's my image. You just image yourself. Okay, this is... I think you have recently talked about your eternal self and you having conversations quite effectively, as I recall.
Yeah.
Anyway, so step into that persona, recognize yourself.
You mean
you know,
be that other person that I'm
sure.
myself
go,
that
go,
I'm talking.
Sure.
It
go
is. You are that other person.
What's that?
You are that other person.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just put your focus there for a while.
Right, I don't sense that because I sense the physical me and that other person is there on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Well, just like you can put all your awareness in a hand or a foot or an eyeball, I'm pretty sure you
so
can put all your awareness on being there.
Okay.
And then you just set up the focus for yourself. I'd like to know more about this thing about, you know, the parents of my personal self or whatever we're talking about, anything.
Okay.
And then as things go along, you know, you don't try to control them, just see what comes up.
Okay. That might be a real fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you'll do well with it.
Okay, great. I got a mission.
Okay, so where are we, 27?
26.
Oh, yeah, Karen, that's where you are.
This process of being born into a body was, for a long time, referred to as quickening, or to make alive. In fact, in the 1700s, abortions occurring before quickening were quite common, because the fetus was not yet considered to be alive. You, as a personal self, brought your body alive.
That's interesting.
So what I understand from ancient writings that I have actually read in the past, that, the quickening happens, but the spirit doesn't, or the being doesn't join the physical body until the baby takes in the first breath, and that's when it happens.
Yeah, that's pretty much when they consider it the quickening. Is the first breath.
And I know, quickening is the first perception of movement that the mother feels, and that's at about 19 weeks. And so that's what that terminology has stuck as.
Okay.
And that's why so many people think that the baby's alive then, but the baby's not alive then, because if you birth that baby, it wouldn't be alive.
Not viable? At what point is it viable,
it's not
before
viable.
Birth?
It's about, 21 weeks is about the earliest that we can actually keep a baby alive. And they oftentimes have problems. But somewhere around 26 weeks, 25 to 26 weeks is much better for an early delivery.
So 6 to 7 months.
Yeah, 40 weeks is considered full term. That's why it's 10 lunar months.
And can you say again what this quickening is?
Quickening is the terminology used when the mother first perceives that she is feeling movement from the baby.
Ah, okay.
But that's, you know, if you know newborns or infants, that's more reflexive, just kicking kind of thing. It's not in any kind of intentional movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the ancient books, and this is like from the 16th century, you know, back then, they actually, or the 14th century, they actually talk about the baby inhales the spirit. That brings it alive. And I can just say from many deliveries that I've been in, if that baby doesn't take in that breath, that baby is not alive.
Okay.
Thank you.
And you can
you can beat on them all day, and if they don't choose to take in that breath, they aren't going to live.
Pretty much true.
Anyway.
Passage 27. Whether you walked in or breathed in or were born into a body, some people say you become a living soul. And this reveals that you do not have a soul, you are a living soul, which is an eternal personalized self, or a communioned eternal self, personal self. But this is difficult for many to realize.
It is, because I always feel like I've been taught that the soul goes on. But it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a fact, and that's a very important distinction of what Roger showed us.
I know, that's quite different.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have anything more to say on that one?
So the living soul becomes a body at birth?
It's the
Can
communion.
I put it that way?
It's, it's basically the communion. It doesn't happen until the communion occurs.
Right. Ah, okay, the communion.
It's like the out-picturing, I mean, the emergent of the communion.
Yeah. Right. Now I get it.
Number 28. After entering the starter body your parents created, you began making changes by replacing every cell in your body, such that after 7 years, your body was completely new and renewed as yours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we supposedly do that every 7 years. There's a lot of things that we renew in much shorter time than that.
24 hours.
More like the lining of your gut every week. Once a week, you can have a new lining.
Well, actually, 24 hours for the GI cells and for the mucous membranes in your mouth and your cornea.
Well, they are quite proficient.
29? Mm-hmm. Are we ready?
Yep.
You do not realize any of this and act accordingly. And unfortunately, neither do your body's parents. They believe and act as though they are your parents. And even after you have remodeled your body by exchanging every cell so it is comfortably yours and suits you well, or it reasonably suits you, even then, your parents don't recognize you, so they continue being your parents, and you their child. Why do you do that? And why do you treat your children in the same way when you become the parent? Well, it's kind of like a late, it's kind of too late now. My son is too old for me to reparent him. Or not parent him. How about that?
Yeah, but you can help him in the parenting of his children.
Oh, yeah.
Increasingly, yeah, I'm looking at my kids and wondering who else is. So that begs a question, and that is that after 7 years, with its completely remade and renewed body, we're not, is it true that we're not capable offending for ourselves and still need the nurture of others, the part of others.
You mean when they get to be 7 years old?
What's that?
You're asking if we don't need others when we become 7 years old? Well,
I can't imagine a seven-year-old going out in the world by itself taking care of itself.
But then again, they have found children that have fended for themselves from quite young ages.
Yes.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, I had to, Patrick.
You have to?
I was the manager of this household at 7 years old.
Oh, really?
And I knew that I couldn't rely on my mother, so... Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that
I cooked my spaghettis and I cleaned the house and... Yeah.
So the sayings we sometimes hear about it takes a village to raise a child, that as much as anything is that we seem to be genetically programmed at least to create a social network that supports the community.
Well, but you probably wouldn't have come into that family except that you knew that you needed those that ability to take care of yourself, and you had that, so it was okay.
Are you speaking to me?
I'm just throwing it out there. I know for myself I had to defend myself early on, but I had to do a lot of stuff early on, and yeah, I guess I probably contracted to come in with that crazy family because I could be more me.
Can I raise then, if I remember correctly, Roger always said that coming alive was a random event. And going by the definition he used for random was that without intention.
That's true.
So that would suggest that we don't choose a family.
That's what he said also.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have to confess, I hold a consideration every time I hear stuff like that now.
So do I.
Whether he meant that as an absolute statement or if he was talking in different contexts, like the body is random, but there's a different context operating itself. And I don't know the answer.
The way I look at it a lot of times is that it's random, but yet I think that a certain body kind of vibrates at a certain vibrational rate, and another one, you know, an eternal being vibrates at a certain rate, and it's not set who will come together, but...
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's an attraction, and I've always held that feeling, that it's not that you necessarily pick them, but that they are attracted to each other because of the vibrational rate.
That is easier for me to go for these days.
Oh.
So it's not a causal thing, and it's not a setup thing, and it's not a choice. It's random, but yet it is still a frequency, a vibration, that things vibrating together tend to go together.
Mm-hmm. So what happens to free will?
Like a track.
Free will doesn't... What are you asking about free will?
Are you here alive by choice, or are you here alive not by your choice?
I think that there is a choice that is made whether you want to be alive or not. It's almost like there's a big pull out.
If we're going to go say it's a random event up until you're seven, and then you choose whether to continue being alive, okay, that's one thing.
But I had always taken a big premise of forever living was, you know, you weren't dumped into this world against your will.
No, I agree. I think that it's kind of like you volunteer by your vibrational rate, whether you will be alive or not. And if you don't have a vibrational rate that works with the earthly experience, this physical experience, you won't come here. And it may be that if you vibrate at a different rate, you may end up on a different planet in a different types of civilizations. Because I do believe that we're not the only planet that is inhabited.
Okay, well, in that regard then, me only, as you talk about that, I mean, I think of, and we're not talking about making a conscious choice, I'll go there and do that. We're talking about kind of like where your dreams come from, how you, whatever, live to have those things come about in some form of a choice. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but I'm talking about a pretty, I don't know how to describe it.
Well, didn't he always say, evidently, you know, don't make choices?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
In what way?
And that's true. I mean, I don't know that, maybe, I don't know how to say this, on that level of life, I don't know how to say it, you know, then you're not really making choices, you're just more what you are.
Yeah, but that's why I think that what you are is a vibrational thing. So when we leave this earthly physical place, we're going to be vibrating at a certain frequency. And for some people, they would be open to a physical experience again. And for others, and this has come out of the Jacobing before, others can choose never to incarnate.
Right.
But I think...
If we can, let's take this a bit further.
Okay.
I've come to a conclusion that, let's back up from that. I seem to remember that when we did the series of articles that dealt with loader body and starter self and all that kind of stuff, that even the eternal self was a starter. It didn't seem to me that we were talking about a fully formed entity yet decided to come alive.
Yes, I agree.
It was very, very much a starter nature. Just like
okay.
There was no entity out there making a choice to come alive.
No.
And I've held this view that one of the very base functions of the universe is, for lack of a better term for the moment, has the urge to expand. The universe expands. And coming alive, the universe coming alive in this body, your body, my body, is a visible expression of that urge to expand. But it's only a starter thing. And we bring it alive, we give it dimension, and in communion, we expand creation, and we expand the universe. So there's no this entity deciding, oh, is it my turn, or I don't want to do that. That's what the universe does. It propels itself into creation.
But I think that what's happening is it's not that they're making a choice, but there is an emergent that occurs.
Yeah, that's right. And there's no intention there that says, I'm going to come alive. It's emergent. Thanks, Misty.
Okay, so I like to ask how that jibes with your experience of DJ Parker out one life and into this one. And an objection you felt like you had to that.
That's a really good question, and I've puzzled on that. And there's a whole bunch of things that run through my mind. And it's I think in my case, at a young age, I was like under five. I think actively communing with the eternal self that had come alive with my body. And it was at a time in 1944 when I was born, the World War II was drawing to a close, and there was movies, there was talk, there was members of the family, I had an uncle coming home from the war. It was a really, really big deal. So as a five-year-old kid, I had a focus there with all these events going on. And I had not been trained away from my eternalness yet, I dived into mind and found that life and identified with it. And I just became very, very close to it. And that became part of who I was. I've been able to go in, look at that life from the time D.J. Parker was a young toddler through to finishing officer school and going off to war. That's almost as if it's my past as well. But that's my understanding now, is that at my early age, I had not yet been trained away from being in communion with my eternal self, and I accessed mine, and I went to that, and a little bit later in life, similarly accessing mine, I found samurai, and it became very, very important to me, and became part of my parentage, my lineage, or my provenance, as you used the term earlier. And I think that's what each one of us, in one way or another, before we got cultured into, oh, you can't do that, don't daydream, you got to think hard and cause the right things. I think we all did that and connected through mind before it was trained away from us.
Yeah, right, deep, yep.
Remember the conversations we had with Roger, and he was, he said there's more people alive that we have past lives, or there just wasn't enough people alive.
Yeah, it hadn't been enough bodies for everybody to have 80 past lives yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to be, had to be some mechanism through mind when we were able to, earlier before we got cultured away from it, be able to access mind more clearly and completely. Remember the stories we've heard about Roger as a kid? He was an old man already at five or less. Old man, not like decrepit. But he, right from the beginning, he was accessing mind. I think so, and he continued to access mind actively through his life.
Oh, yeah, he used to talk about it when he would tell his brother stories at night. He says, you know, what I was really doing was accessing mind and pulling in stories from memory that was out there. He'd sit in bed. He had a bedroom with his brother, and his brother loved to hear the story. So every night he would access and tell his brother another story as they went to bed. So he was actively practicing even as a very small boy.
Yeah.
He was such a stubborn son of a bitch that he could never be cultured away from mine.
Yeah. I'll give you that. Okay, anybody else have anything to say on that?
No.
So, Simone?
30. An interesting aspect of all this is that your parents were never your parents. Sorry.
Wow.
And you were never their child. You were, and still are today, a foster child taken in by your parents. Oh, sorry for a moment. I had something in the wrong throat.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at you, it's just that sometimes your language is good for you.
Well, sometimes I was just wondering what about this passage is choking you up a bit.
Yeah, and still, shall I start over again?
Yeah, please.
An interesting aspect of all this is that your parents were never your parents, and you were never their child. You were, and still are today, a foster child taken in by your parents.
So it's a foster child. You know what a foster child is?
What's a foster child, yes.
It means that you take in somebody else's children to take care of them.
Uh-huh.
Biological parents give them up.
And somebody else raises them. Or the state takes them away from their parents.
I like the cuckoo dolls, yes. Yeah, okay. Flaky king.
Whatever you say.
You may... you may not have been strangers, but you were probably never related. In fact, you may never have had much in common at all. And your brothers and sisters are also foster children.
Foster
children. No member of your family is actually related to you, and not even by association. This is true of everything in your body and life. No exceptions, no happenstance. That's an interesting word.
Things that happen along the way.
Yeah.
So what do you think he means by happenstance there?
Well, that it just occurred,
accident.
That it just happened.
No.
Well, random kind of just happened, but I take that to be accidental. Maybe random is like that, but accidental by mistake, accidental by, I don't know, what does he mean by that?
I think that you're on the right track.
Isn't it odd that he would use a word that he didn't get a chance to grill us on what it actually meant? And come to some kind of conclusion for all of us, because that was one thing he was so adamant about, is that we don't speak a common language.
Well, he was always looking for words that could say what he meant without having to use so many words in repetition. So he was always working the thesaurus and all of the synonyms and all those things all the time. So, what happenstance?
Does it have something to do with circumstance also?
No, happenstance is more like just something that occurred. It just happened.
It's an unexpected random event.
Yeah.
Okay.
My fault, it just happened to me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that
chance, the fluke.
When I run across this kind of word in this passage, I go, this is true of everything in your body and life. no exceptions, and if I can't figure out what he meant by happenstance, I can leave it out, and it seems to be complete, no exceptions.
Mm. Yeah. Just a random thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, this brings me back to the paragraph 25. So if I am a foster child, then it's only DNA that I share with my family, and maybe I may not maybe others. Like you are my true family.
And we're all children of the universe.
It's possible.
Pardon?
It's possible.
Yeah.
But more likely we are kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Of like mind.
Yeah, that's what I thought also in 25. Being born is by DNA, and born is like being cared by like mind individuals, or
yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Andrew.
31, if you enjoy a relationship with your parents and children, or whatever that relationship may be, that is by choice, not by parentage. This is true of everything in your life, or absent from your life. Huh? Wait a minute. Back up. Let's start over here. If you enjoy a relationship with your parents and children, or whatever that relationship may be, that is by choice, not by parentage. This is true of everything in your life, or absent from your life, including beliefs and teachings, and any continuation of these matters is by choice as well.
So we're not propelled through life by any association. Mm-hmm. We make choice by those things all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess this is for people who say, no, they must be my kids, I love them, or must be my parents, I love them, or whatever.
So then when you do, you make them your family.
Right.
Okay. Karen?
Number 32. Doesn't this change your images and concepts of yourself and life?
Okay. 33. Unfortunately, as you made your body more comfortable and like you, instead of being communion with your body, you held on tightly and fearfully and became as one, such that when your body pains, you pain. When your body enjoys, you enjoy. When your body tires, you tire. And now you are afraid that when your body dies, you will die. You created these concerns and conflicts by you and your body becoming one. And you've carried this disruptive concept into every aspect of your body and life today.
Amen.
Oh. Yep, absolutely.
That happened.
But I got to experience, you know, with when Roger was dying, he was fine with it. It was just like, this is my body. This, you know, it's not me. And he was very true to that. Now, that's not to say that he didn't wish it had been other, but he knew that it wasn't him. And so he would, even though his body was paining, and a lot of times he talked about it that way, my body hurts, but I'm fine. Okay, Patrick?
Number 34, let's keep your body and you as a personal self separate through communion, although communion, I'll start that again. Let's keep your body and you as a personal self separate through communion, not as one.
Though communion.
Though communion, damn. Personal self separate though communion, not as one. For that communion is sufficient to embody personal self you as a personal being and give you life and identity.
Yeah, they get all smushed together.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we smusherize them.
Mm-hmm. 35, it is essential that you always sense yourself being in your body, not as your body.
Okay, 36, your body only works for you, not against you. And it intimately reveals you that those are important roles with which you could not appear or function or be yourself, which is to be alive. In other words, without your body, you would exist, but you would not be alive. Absolutely.
Andrew? Is there any discussion on that, or are we on 37? Anybody have anything to say on that?
What do you say?
Anybody have any discussion about that, or questions?
Pretty black and white.
Yeah.
Okay, clear to me.
37. As a personal being, you are alive. As a personal self, you exist, but are not alive. However, in either case, as a personal self and as an embodied personal being, you are very fragile and short-lived. I'm just reading that over. As an embodied personal being, you are fragile and short-lived. If you want to be firm and steady, and long-lived, you must embody yourself and come alive as an eternal being, because no one, not even God, is going to do that for you. And if you want to be longer-lived, as you aspire to be, then you must embody yourself as you truly desire in a life that suits you well, and this is easier done than said. Okay.
Okay,
Karen? 38. Originally, as an eternal self, you were a condition of being. In that, you did not exist, and were not alive, and could do little other than consider yourself.
So what do you think that means? What is a condition of being?
Well, that's when you can become, you can become, you can be in yourself and the embodiment of your personal being on this plane.
What?
Because you can come into existence. You can think yourself into existence and know yourself as a communion, eternal being and physical, and what's the other term? Personal being, personal self. Well, it makes sense to me.
Anybody else?
So I think that part of the conversation we had earlier is that we're actually as an eternal self, we're simply a condition of being. And a little more.
Right, so that you weren't really able to make a choice as to come into existence or not. You were just a condition. But I've run into problems personally with other than consider yourself. Back to his bubble thing. Remember when he used to talk about the bubble?
Yeah.
Good point.
Now, you could sit and consider yourself, but you couldn't do much else. You couldn't do anything or make something occur. You could only sit and basically ponder.
Mm-hmm.
Your non-existent navel.
Yeah, you had no other experience, no external stimuli.
Nothing external. You know, it's like, you know, remember those tanks they used to have where they put you in the tank and they took away all external...
Sensory deprivation chambers, yeah.
Right.
I used to love to do those.
So it must be something like that to some extent, except that you're not...
Actually, when I did a past life under drugs, ketamine, I actually had an awareness that I was a rock on the side of a cliff.
Okay.
And that's all I had was an awareness.
Okay.
And so it's interesting to hear this, you know, all these years later. That's medication they use for, they've used it for anesthesia, but it gives people weird trips.
Oh.
So now they're using it for chronic depression because people become aware that it's not about this attachment in this lifetime.
Okay.
That was...
I can just all sit around singing the song, I am a rock, I am an island.
No, you're the musician that came up with my mind.
I think it's just saying you were stoned, Sharon.
There you go. There you go.
No.
Aaron.
It was, yeah,
the,
I was
you
under
don't get
a
joke?
Ketamine trip. Huh?
I know. You get the joke? Rock, stone?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, it's bad when you have to explain your jokes.
Sorry.
No, I totally understood it, but the reality is, yes, I was out with drugs.
If you are in a sense... Oh, there he goes. If you are in a sense deprivation tank of body temperature fluid in a completely silent and dark room such that you cannot sense anything... then you have only yourself and your memories to conceptualize and mind. That's what I was saying. Brilliant minds and all.
But now knowing all of this stuff from the class, it would be so much more fun to go back and do a deprivation tank.
Okay, you go for it, girl. You going to go on the drugs again?
What?
With the drugs or without the drugs?
Well, I never did deprivation tank with drugs. I did, anyway, so it might be an interesting experience.
Well, next time you're down at the hot ponds in Kapoho, just bring a snorkel. And a blindfold.
And antibiotics.
Yeah, lots of them.
So number 40. In minding yourself, you projected an image of yourself, and that self-image was your personal self. That's really important.
Yep.
Which part?
That image was your personal self. In projecting that image of self, you are that image.
How if it's random?
No, once you're alive,
embodied, it's not random anymore.
Yeah, once you're alive, embodied, and you project an image of yourself, that self-image is your personal self.
Yeah, it's not random anymore.
You mean after the age of seven?
After the quickening, and you're old enough to be able to conceptualize.
Well, I think, don't we come in with that ability and then lose it?
Don't think you ever lose it.
Yeah, I was going to say,
okay.
I don't think you lose it.
I think you may
box it down and tamp it down, but I don't think you lose it.
Right, I do think that they become very childlike.
What becomes childhood?
But when babies are first born, they oftentimes are very aware. I mean, it's amazing. And then they become more baby-like.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And that's always quite interesting.
Yeah. When they're first born, there's just so much depth there. You just wish they could talk. or we can understand.
Yeah, it's like a bright light comes in, and then
it
slowly dims out.
Then they get busy trying to work out their body that they picked up.
Yeah, they poop their pants.
Not right away.
They become obsessed with things like that.
It distracts everything.
Yes, it does.
Well, you would too if you were carrying around a sack of shit.
I remember.
That's where my granddaughter loves sitting in it.
It's important to recognize in number 40 that you can't help but do this.
Poop your pants?
Decide to do or not do. You are always projecting an image of yourself. You can't help it. And that image is a personal self.
Yeah, you can't withhold it.
See, but I really felt like before I died in my last lifetime, I was short and dark, and I looked at those tall blondes and said, if I only looked like that, I'd be allowed to live. I wish I could be like that. And then woke up in this tall, blonde, anti-Semitic Norwegian-German family and had to find myself.
Except that you weren't some person in a small body with dark hair or any of that. That would mean
in my previous life?
There is no real previous life.
Right. Okay. But I'm very confused because of the dreams I've had and everything, and yeah, I didn't write them down long ago, so.
Yeah, but that was, you know, just like we talked about, accessing memory, accessing mind.
Yeah.
And you took on that persona, perhaps, and I don't know a good way to explain it, but
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I took it all the way to meeting a sixth-generation Kabbalistic rabbi who told me that I came back very quickly, that he knew of many souls that came back very quickly. So I don't know. And so, you know, but all of this stuff, did I don't know, I probably made it all up.
Well, I don't know that you made it up, but I think that you may have accessed information that you made your own.
Yeah, it certainly made sense. And so, but what difference is it if I make it up that way or if I consciously make it up now?
I don't think that you can make up anything that you don't already know. You understand what that
means? So does that mean we go on to 41?
No, but do you understand what I'm saying in that?
Yeah, we have all the data and information.
Okay.
If I needed to make that up to make sense of my life so that I could move forward in my life and be more me, then whatever, it's okay.
Okay.
The important element is you projected an image of yourself, and that self is you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else did it for you. You did it.
Okay, 41.
That's Andrew again. No, Simone.
Simone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 41. You, as the personal self that occupies your body, are the self-image of an eternal self. But that self-image or personal self alone cannot embody an eternal self to an eternal being. However, following the description of your parents providing a body to transfigure as you as a personal self to a personal being, you as a personal being transfigure you as an embodied self to an embodied being.
You missed the line.
No. Transfigure you as
an eternal
a personal self to a personal being. You as a personal being transfigure you as an eternal self to an eternal being. And in that, you communion yourself as a personal being, eternal being. Personal self, personal being, eternal self, eternal being, personal being, eternal being. That's the communion behind, huh?
Any questions on that one?
Misty?
Go ahead.
I was just going to suggest that it shifts gears here, and it might be better to leave 42 to next Monday and begin again.
Does it start anew?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. We can do that.
Wait a minute. What happens?
You have to stay tuned for the next exciting episode.
I mean, does something change or something?
It goes into...
What was that, Andrew?
I just wanted to know why the choice to do that now.
Well, I've been reading ahead, not just now, but I've been reading ahead, and 42 opens up a fairly broad discussion.
Okay.
And I wondered if it'd be an idea to leave it when, you know, we've got more time. And it's getting late here. I was just suggesting it might be better to start that one and give us a fresh start next week.
Okay.
Works for me. Anybody else have anything they want to talk about what we've read?
I actually, there's something that it kind of arises out of what we've read, and it's something that, I guess, how to put it. I have challenges that I haven't overcome yet in terms of how to describe this to our group. People still seem to hang on to this notion that there's a linear progression of past lives, that each of us lived, came alive and died, came alive and died, came alive and died, until we came alive this time. And it's the same eternal being that's gone through all these lives.
Yeah, that's reincarnation.
That's not the way it works. That's commonly held, and then we run into that whole notion of there's not been enough people alive up until now to be half lives living into all these lives of however many billion people we got on the planet now. And it really is, as we saw here a minute ago, that it was originally as an eternal self, not even an eternal being, just an eternal self. You were a condition of being, that's all. And a condition of being, not Ralph or Charlie or George or Sweetie or whoever, just a condition of being. Little other, could do little other than consider yourself. It's when that condition of being comes alive in a body that it becomes an eternal being. Identifiable.
That's when it becomes, it becomes a personal being. Right?
What's that?
Is that when it becomes an eternal being, or is that when it becomes a personal being? I guess it's eternal being, you're right.
No, it's got to become the personal being first. And then from that, then we become, we create,
the
we person, are
yeah,
the ones
we
to...
We create the eternal being.
Yeah. We recognize ourselves as the eternal self, and we create our personal being into an eternal being. Right?
Right. When it comes to beings... When it comes to beings, the personal being comes first, then the eternal being. There's an eternal self.
Okay, you as a personal being transfigure you as an eternal self to an eternal being.
Right.
Have to have a personal being that does the transfiguration.
Yes.
Yep.
And that eternal being didn't exist before.
Never did, and never will again.
That's right.
The thing that I try to get across to people is, though, that data and information, that was that eternal being, is available for anybody to mind and to explore the memory. And to adopt it into their own lives as if it were their life. Which is...
I'm not sure I subscribe to all this yet. It's still beyond me.
You have to read a book. It's called Big Magic, and it's Elizabeth Gilbert, and it's about how all of these thoughts are alive out there for anybody, and that if somebody rejects it, somebody else can turn up with it, and you go, oh my God, that's my thought.
Yeah, it's available for everyone. Everyone could access the same memory.
Yes, that you didn't take advantage of it, so it went elsewhere.
But it didn't go elsewhere. It's available for anybody. So
right. That's because. Anyway, I thought it was interesting, the correlation.
Yep.
Hmm.
Well, you just imaginate on it, Andrew, and see what you come up with. maybe you can enlighten us onto something that we never even thought about before.
What's the name of that bug that's making that noise there now?
Pokey frog.
Pokey frog.
Oh, pokey frog.
Yeah, I've gotten so I don't even hardly hear him anymore. It's like crickets when I was growing up, you know?
Yep,
or like the katydid in Houston.
Yep, the same kind of thing. You just
they
get
scream.
Used to. People say to me, oh, don't
well,
those things keep you up at night? And I go, no, I don't even notice them. Okay, so if there's not anything else...
So they are still growing and breathing?
Yeah, well, I have a neighbor that has this big spray contraption that he's trying to knock them down. He was out there yesterday working on it, and he's supposedly going to come up through the property and spray it and try to knock down their numbers. So they're just spraying citric acid, so it's nothing dangerous. So
yeah.
I'm like, go ahead, go for it. So, anyway... If nobody has anything else to discuss on these matters, then I guess we would say good night for now.